Geography. Free space for geography. Extending teaching and learning methods beyond the boundaries of campus.
Did you hear about Frontline?
Frontline,
by the way, has an outstanding production.
Geography Frontline.
Hey, Frontliners, how's it going? It's good to be back on a Monday. I'm not sure if you followed what happened last week, so here's a quick summary. After completing last week's episode, you know, I wanted to upload the file to the server, but then, all of a sudden, without any warning, I read the following message. Dear Torsten, we hope you will accept our sincere apologies for the inconvenience caused by deactivating your Mevio account. Inconvenience. Oh yeah. Our goal is to provide our viewers with the highest quality brand safe video online entertainment. Recently, while conducting a review, we found some content uploaded by account holders, so like me, did not meet the standards. Okay, granted, I'm not producing video, but anyways, the email goes on. Therefore, we had to remove the ability to upload content from all user accounts that did not produce approved featured content via a license agreement with Mevio. As a result, your podcast was affected by this process. In recent years, Mevio has evolved from a podcast company into a thriving online video entertainment network delivering big entertainment in short video format. If you are interested in helping us build a quality short-form brand-safe video entertainment network, please submit a new show for consideration. No, thank you. I don't want to do that. Dude, hey, can you imagine how surprised I was? Huh? I'm falling out of the terms of use? Come on. Hey, that never was a problem for the last 4 years. And I have to say, I'm really disappointed, to put it nicely. Yeah, by these guys at Mevio. What the hell? What were you thinking? Huh? Building your platform on all the podcasters out there? Because, without us, really, without us, without me sending in content week per week per week for the last 4 years, you wouldn't have any content for your website. And then after the service gets well known and gets really popular and you get some money from sponsors, you kick your longtime producers out with any kind of warning. That's not right. That's not right. So, all the frontliners that followed the show via Mevio are screwed now. They're screwed because they don't find any information on the website what happened to Frontline. And Frontline so far got only about the little tiny number of 50,000 hits alone on Mevio, on this website. Come on. Okay, whatever. There's really nothing we can do about it. And going on bitching about these things won't help it, won't really help it. So I don't want to lose any more good karma. Let's just step back a little. Take a deep breath. Go on with the show. Simply go on. So, I had to do some major changes under the hood and we are back online again. Frontline now runs on our own geography servers. That is great. That is awesome. And that's really safe. And that makes sure that this won't happen again. And while I had to upload all 117 episodes again, I decided to do something. I decided to integrate some really nice updates for you guys, for all the frontliners out there listening to the show week per week. And so first of all, the names of all frontline episodes look alike now. The date and the spelling are consistent now. So then I made some changes regarding the audio production. Yeah. All episodes will be produced in 128 Mbit with a new decoder. And that new decoder provides us with the same sound quality we had before, till now, but with a 60% reduce in file size. And that's really amazing. So we have about 1 megabyte per minute, and this show should be, so last week's episode, I did that the first time on episode 117. We have about 20 minutes content, so it's about 20 megabytes. So before that, it would have been like almost 50. So really great if you're relying on an audio player like an iPod with not so much storage capacity, yeah? Like a tiny little iPod Shuffle or whatever you use. That's the thing. And finally, the show notes, where I put together all the links to everything I'm talking about and everything you post on Facebook and we talk about in the show. All the show notes are now integrated into the ID3 tags in a way that you can look at them in podcatchers, like in iTunes. You just have to click on the information button, that little I in iTunes, for example, of this episode, of the current episode, and you can see it all. All show notes works for all the older episodes too. By the way, I did that for all 118 episodes. But you would have to download them again for this feature. And before I forget it all, that's really important, frontliners. Older episodes may appear twice in your subscribe feed because as you might imagine, the feed address has changed, right? The file address hasn't changed, so that's why you still get, if you're a subscriber, the podcast, the episode 117 and 118 downloaded to your feed. But the original feed, behind that feed, the source feed, so to say, that has changed from the Mevio server to the Geography server. So nothing you will ever have to worry about. Continues working. But that's why it might appear twice in your feed every older episode. So just don't bother. Don't spend any attention to it. Just don't download it again. Or if you want to, my downloads will dramatically go up. And the traffic my server produces, but that's fine. So do as you wish. And if you want to have all the older show notes, just reload every episode from the new feed address. Yeah. Okay. What else? To sum it up, I really hope that everything works now. It works really fine, and you won't experience any troubles with the server change. If you do, please let me know, and I'll try to help you as fast as I can. I did a lot of work on the Frontline website and on all the things for the last 6-7 days, because I was really so... I had a lot of bad energy I had to use some way. So instead of beating someone up or writing bad emails, I just decided to do a lot of very good things to help the show grow, evolve, and get better. So, as I said, please send me an email if something shouldn't work as it supposed to do. Because we want to have the show going and really evolve and really make progress, right? Yeah. So after the upload of episode 117 last Friday, there wasn't so much time to listen to the show. I know that. You only had the weekend this last past two and a half days. But I just don't want to have the server problem affect the routine of the show. So here is a brand new episode, 118 of Geography Frontline. And today we continue. We simply continue our talk about urban renewal. Have you ever been to Croatia? Croatia? Europe, Mediterranean Sea, been there? I haven't, but I definitely want to go there one day. Not only because I read about Diocletian's palace that can be found in the city of Split, that's in Croatia. And you can read about that palace. Diocletian built the massive palace in preparation for his retirement on May 1st. Oh, that's very accurate. Because it was 305 Anno Domini. So it lies in a bay, that palace, on the south side of a shore peninsula running out from the Dalmatian coast, 4 miles from Salona, the capital of the Roman province of Dalmatia. So that's from Wikipedia. So what's interesting about this palace is the following. The importance of Diocletian's palace far transcends local significance because of its level of preservation and the buildings of succeeding historical periods, starting in the Roman period, which formed the very tissue of Old Split. The palace is one of the most famous and integral architectural and cultural buildings on the Croatian Adriatic coast. The palace represents the most valuable example of Roman architecture on the eastern coast of the Adriatic. Its form of the arrangement of the buildings within the palace represents a transitional style of imperial villa, Hellenistic town, and Roman camp. That's from an official website from the UNESCO. So, wait a minute. A valuable example of Roman architecture. Do you recall the typical elements of the Roman city? The orthogonal street system, that would be one of them. Two major roads, remember? Called Decumanus and Via Principalis. Then we have the Forum, an open space at the crossing of Decumanus and Via Principalis. We have a theater, thermae, temple, right, yeah? So that sounds like an interesting visit if you're looking for some real-life examples of Roman urban planning. But that's not why I thought the Diocletian Palace might be interesting for us to talk about. So why is it interesting? Let's take a listen.
When Rome fell, Diocletian's palace was abandoned. Eventually, a medieval town sprouted from its abandoned shell. And to this day, the maze of narrow alleys, once literally Diocletian's hallways, makes up the core of Split.
So, you know what I mean? What I'm up to? The palace is an example for urban renewal. Urban renewal we talked about in episode 117. And not only one single reuse. Let's look at a website, theatlanticcities.com. There they say, after Diocletian's death, the palace was first a refuge for exiled imperial family members. Then, after destruction of the nearby Roman city of Salona by the Avars and slaves, at the beginning of the 7th century, the palace became a shelter for fleeing citizens. Later, a medieval town, a Renaissance regional center, and eventually a major city, with core elements of the palace still prominent today. So, we have a Roman palace, we have a shelter, or it was a shelter, it was a medieval town, a Renaissance regional center, a Croatian city. Wow! Wow! That's amazing, yeah? So, many of Split's today citizens live not only where the Roman palace once was located. No. They really live inside the palace. It's still there. Or parts of it are. So, imagine your street address. Where do you live? I live 5012 Via Principalis, House of the Servants. No, I'm just kidding. But the old structure is still there, and there are many persistent elements. The medieval cathedral in the middle of the Roman architecture and today's cafes, that looks amazing. Take a look at that at Google Maps or wherever you want to look at it or have a chance to look at pictures. That's really great. Charles Wolfe, or Wolfie, writes on theatlanticcities.com, what the history of Diocletian's palace can teach us about adaptive reuse. And I thought, adaptive reuse, well, that sounds perfect for us to talk about today. He says, I believe that visiting Diocletian's palace and reflecting on how the old can blend and in fact be adapted to suit the new, provides incomparable perspective. This can add value to today's discussion of familiar building restoration approaches or even already innovative, largely replacement-style redevelopment of areas like former military base, an airport, or an institutional campus. The scale of adaption and Split confirms how humans can be at home and enriched by large-scale incorporation of the past. Yeah, the author really seems to like this reuse and transformation thing. What do you think about that? His main conclusion is the following. Throughout history, cities have fulfilled central cultural, economic, and religious roles as both centers of settlement and qualitative measures of human habitat. To reinvent them, or juxtapose the best of the past, we need to know where we have been and where we are going at more than a building scale. Wow. So, in reusing the past and dealing with the past, we enhance our urban life, right? Is that so? But what about cultural themes that are changing over the times? Influences, globalization. Well, you could say, of course, it's a good thing to keep the past alive. I mean, who doesn't want to live in a Roman palace, right? But seriously, is living in some ancient building really more? Is it more than just a nice lifestyle thing? What should be so special about it anyways? Let's do a quick vote on this one. Yeah, what does it mean if we decide to reuse urban structures instead of getting rid of them, tearing them down and building something totally new? That's exactly what I would like to know from you when I ask, living in Diocletian's palace, A deeper understanding of life, B, a clever reuse of old stones, C, a postmodern lifestyle element, D, nothing special, or answer E, another opinion. Go to this week's episode on geography.com or click on the quick vote link on our Facebook page. That would be facebook.com/geography, and tell us what you think. And in case you should have another opinion or would like to clarify what you voted for, just feel free to leave a comment in the comment section of the quick vote. There's the possibility to leave some comments. You can write something after the results of the quick vote just pop up. And you can do that right now. Yeah, why not? Do that right now while listening to the next song. And I have to say, it really took me some time to find something appropriate and suitable for this week's topic. Diocletian, as you might imagine, isn't something that pops up too often in a music library. And Split brings up hundreds of hits, but all with a totally different meaning. Finally, I found this song from the album Persistent. It's called Goodbye. So, what's matching here? Actually, the band's name. These guys are lost in Rome.
Change the seasons.
This is Lost in Rome with their song Goodbye from the album Persistence. Links to the album in both the US and the German iTunes store can be found, as always, in today's show notes. So I'm not quite done with Split yet. If you don't mind, I'd like to add something different, another element to the discussion. I was thinking about what was said about urban reuse and, I'm citing here, the restoration to ensuring renewed function within the context of a modern urban community. As I said, restoration and reuse seem to be quite good things for the vital life of a city. And because there is much ancient architecture to be found in Split, the historical complex of Split, with the Palace of Diocletian, was named World Heritage by the UNESCO. And the UNESCO website says, and I read that at the beginning of the show, but just read that again, just a sentence. The importance of Diocletian's palace far transcends local significance because of its level of preservation and the buildings of succeeding historical periods, starting with the Roman period, which form the very tissue of Old Split. So it goes on. The UNESCO goes on citing the medieval architecture as something that also has to be preserved. In the early Middle Ages, the town was built within the palace. Commercial prosperity of the 13th and 14th centuries inspired more intensive building. So, it's totally clear that the historical complex of Split was named World Heritage not only because of the Roman temple, but because of its constant reuse. Urban renewal as World Heritage. Interesting, huh? But there is something that really bothers me. The process of renewal. This process is over now. There will be no new buildings, no restructuring, no more. No more, let's say, updates. In my opinion, the UNESCO World Heritage label is really problematic when it comes to lively constructs as the city center of Split. To conserve the cultural heritage, to do that, it permits any further changes. Because how would you want to preserve something if you allow changes? Where something worth of preserving could be destroyed, right? And that means that the Diocletian's palace finally will turn into a mausoleum. If not now, and perhaps in 50 years from now. If the urban population of Split decides or demands or needs changes made to the current configuration of the palace, they can't change anything. They can't. Unless they accept losing this status as World Heritage. And you can see that. Look at the city of Dresden in eastern Germany, where they decided to build a bridge that was really needed for all the traffic for the commuters. And so they lost the World Heritage status. Look at the Upper Middle Rhine Valley in central Germany. Same thing. There are discussions going on building a bridge for the commuters. They don't have a bridge from Mainz, from the city of Mainz to, I think, about Koblenz. And that's about around 60 miles. And within 60 miles, you can pass the river just by a ferry. Well, that takes some time. So you don't build the bridge and you can keep the World Heritage status. So that's really a problem. And in this sense, the UNESCO label negates the very reason why Split's historic complex was named a World Heritage in the first place. It was because of urban renewal, of urban reuse. From a Roman city to a medieval city to a Renaissance city up to now. Until today's life and the wonderful cafes in the shadow of the cathedral near the Roman temple. And so, But what about future elements that might have to be added to continue with that lively atmosphere of Split? Well, that will fade. No more. Yeah, World Heritage. Nicely done.
What's that sound?
Yeah, and if living in Diocletian's palace should have some kind of a special meaning, then it's because of individual perception, right? I live where so many generations have lived before me, and I can sense history, the special meaning of the place, and so on. So individual perception is kind of crucial, and you have to be very open to experience things. So you have to keep your eyes open. And not only your eyes, of course. There's smell and there's sound. And so to sensitize ourselves to better experience urban sound, this category, What's That Sound, of the show brings you short audio snippets of sounds that occur in the urban environment, and try to listen to it very closely and take a guess what this sound might be. This actually was the sound of episode 116 we played back in 117. And because last episode we didn't have a new one because no one had any idea about this piece of audio. And this actually is a bus stopping and opening its doors. Quite simple. If you have the solution right. So this week's sound or sound riddle will be perhaps a little easier to guess. I hope so. Because if you have any idea, you can just go ahead and send in a comment, a guess, to comment@geography.com or post it on the Facebook wall, facebook.com/geography, and let us know what you think this sound might be. A very short clip, I know. But okay, here it is again. Ah, come on, and a third time. So, any ideas? Send your guesses via email or voicemail. Call the Skype voicemail or Frontline. Just open Skype, take the little dial pad, bring that up, and type in Geography, and then you'll be connected to the Geography voicemail and hear a little text. One or two short sentences from me and hear a beep, and then you can record your guess. Say, hey, my name is Torsten and I think this was a dog. Yeah, and then next week we can integrate that MP3 file into the show and talk about what that sound might have been. I'm right back here. Had to grab my iPad. Wait, to bring up the next text I wanted to read to you. In episode 117, we didn't find the time to talk about Alexander von Humboldt, right? But this week we do. And if you should be new to the show, we are reading parts of Alexander von Humboldt's diary. The personal narrative of travels to the equinoctial regions of America that describe his voyages to the Americas in 1799. He is seen as one of the founding fathers of geography, so it might be really interesting for us to listen to what he had to say, right? So the way in which he describes the observations he makes gives us a good sense of how important it is to keep your eyes open and your ears, as we just heard. It's not always easy to describe what you see. So let's learn from someone who was pretty good at it. So where have we stopped? We've been around page 200 and... Yeah, not quite close. And he was on the Canary Islands on Tenerife, where he still is. And he goes on and says, "Before we take leave of the old world to pass into the new, I must advert to a subject which is of general interest because it belongs to the history of man. Promising, right? So, this is the final episode from the Canary Islands. And this time, Humboldt is talking about migration. The population of the Canaries had considerably suffered by the slave trade, by the depredations of pirates, and especially by a long period of carnage. He talks about the native population, about the Guanches, the surviving remnants of the race of the Guanches perished mostly in 1494 in the terrible pestilence called the Modora. The nation of the Guanches was extinct at the beginning of the 17th century. A few old men only were found at Candelaria and Güímar. So he talks about slave trade, which also includes the Americas, if you know about slave trade, right? The population of islands in general, yeah? The population of islands being in general less exposed than that of continents to the effect of migrations. We may presume that in the time of the Carthaginians and the Greeks, the archipelago of the Canaries was inhabited by the same race of men as were found by the Norman and Spanish conquerors. The only monument that can throw any light on the origin of the Guanches is their language. But unhappily, there are not above 150 words extant, and several express the same object according to the dialect of the different islanders. Words. Isn't that great? Do you realize what Humboldt is doing here? I think it's remarkable that Humboldt says that language should be the only possible way to gain knowledge about the origin of the Guanches, the native population of Tenerife. Nothing about racial physical attributes here. That's amazing. In 1799, think about what was going on in the scientific community. How slaves were labeled as not being humans, so they could easily be deported and so on. And so he's talking about language to verify the origin of that population. So, but he still describes practices and actions of the Canarians that he takes as part of their race. So to make that absolutely clear, this is of course due to the century and the scientific progress of the time. Yeah, I just want to make that clear. So, in the end, he says, to them, to the Canarians, we are in great measure indebted for the progress of agriculture in those colonies. He's talking about colonies in South America, Spanish settlements from Chile and La Plata to New Mexico. He says, to the Canarians, we are in great measure indebted for the progress of agriculture in those colonies. The whole archipelago does not contain 160,030 inhabitants, and the Islenos are perhaps more numerous in the new continent than they are in their own country. And that's really interesting, because we not only learn about South America, but about the Canarians. And they seem to have been brought as slaves to South America, right? Where they improved the agricultural system because of their expertise in agriculture. I don't know about you, but I think that's absolutely fascinating to find out more about that migration to South America and how these people evolved the agriculture system and transformed the society there and so on. And so, I don't know, perhaps we find some pieces and descriptions of that in the next passages of Humboldt's voyage to the Americas. ¶¶ Finally, the announcements for this week's episode 118 of Geography Frontline. The first international congress for young researchers in the humanities. That's a congress that takes place from April 18th till 20th, 2012, so upcoming April, at the University Pompeu Fabra in Barcelona, Spain. On the website, in a really nicely made PDF document, they say, through this initiative, we hope to set a proper space for young researchers, PhD candidates or PhDs who have presented their dissertations after April 2008, to show their new approaches, techniques and methodologies currently applied in any discipline of the humanities. In a world of constant change, the interdisciplinary studies have been able to provide innovative and suitable results in different fields of research, which seem to be completely saturated. We hence hope to establish a dialogue between these new lines of research in history, philosophy, art, literature, music, etc., addressing our call to all sorts of humanistic and comparative disciplines. Following subjects of general interests are here suggested. Number one, visual culture. Sounds, looks interesting. Number two, world history. Number three, philosophy and cultural theory. Number four, comparative studies. And number five, humanities in the digital age. So, for any of you who would like to learn more about research methods and present some of them, check out this first conference next April in Barcelona. And isn't that the time of the orange blossom in Spain? That might be really worth a trip, huh? What do you think, frontliners? Yeah, this would be all for today's episode. 118 comes to an end. Use this week's time to think about urban renewal and urban reuse from both episodes 117 and 118, and send in some feedback via email or voicemail, or use the Facebook wall with links, comments, and simple likes. Yeah, they are highly appreciated. Have a great week, frontliners. And never forget, the network is us.